Extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Now, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Matt Doyle, the man, the myth, the transfer window legend, Tom Bogert. What's up? How's it going? It's 2023. It's been weeks, literal weeks. I don't think I've had an ETR break longer than this one. And Doyle, I want to say it's years for sure. I just don't know how many years. Did it feel good to be gone, or did you like that little off the top? Did it bring you back in?
It brought me right back in. So that, I mean, that part was really good. But yes, it was very good to be gone. I really needed that. I got about a 10-day break from really being dug in on soccer. And then over the last 48 hours, or I guess I guess 72 hours at this point, it's all come crashing right back. And we're all
it's
right
like a baptism, you know, like that, you know, like the innocent young babe just dunked in the waters of MLS. Meanwhile, Tom, I know you had a very relaxing break as well. You did almost no work. You certainly weren't on the phone for hours upon hours with agents and GMs and anybody who has any information at all. So congratulations on the ride.
Yeah, Doyle, that sounds really nice. It sounds so great. I am so happy for you. So very happy.
Oh, God, even his mustache looks angry from this view. But by the way, I'm the only one that can see his mustache and also some really resplendent eyebrows. Tom, I was waiting to say that, but I have to say that to you now. You can take that on as you wish. We are not on YouTube for the time being. Right now, this is an audio-only show, so we are slumming it. I don't have my lights on in the home office. I mean, I don't need to shave, but I haven't shaved. 2023 is a new and different year, and we'll find out more details as it goes. I am curious, though, before we get into all the transfer madness that has happened over the past 2 or 3 weeks. I mean, Aaron Long just had Chris Mavinga went through. We had a couple of trades go down while we were in our pre-show meeting here. Whether or not you guys have New Year's resolutions focused around MLS. I don't need to know about what's happening in your personal lives. We'll take that offline. I have some, so I'll let you guys think about them while I give you mine. My number one MLS 2023 New Year's resolution is to get my eldest son, Cameron, into watching some part of Major League Soccer with me. Ooh. I don't think we're going to be in for a full game, obviously. We're 5 years old, and our attention span is not at that level yet. He is interested in soccer, likes playing soccer. We've talked to Rainbow Narwhals on this show before. I'm thinking maybe like, what do you think? Goals of the week?
Yeah, goals like that. Everybody likes goals, right?
Yeah, some sort of like contained YouTube video. Like, hey, Cameron, you want to watch YouTube? And he's like, yeah, Dad. It's like his drug of choice, and we almost never let him watch YouTube. Then I hit him with the MLS goals of the week. That's what you get to watch on YouTube and see where you go from there. The other one is we're going to go to some RB2 games. In Montclair, because I'm moving back to New Jersey.
Let's go.
I'm not moving back to New Jersey. I'm moving to New Jersey. I know almost nothing about New Jersey, but
I got you.
The Wiebe Ewan fam is rolling back to the East Coast. So we'll be back there. And while we're on the topic of New Jersey, I just want to say congrats to a New Jersey soccer, college soccer legend, Sasha Kleshin, on a sick career. Chivas USA to the Champions League, UEFA Champions League, the second tier. Really cool stuff for Sasha. So that's my New Year's resolutions around Major League Soccer. Doyle, do you have any?
I hadn't made one, but I think, you know, part of why I enjoyed my holiday so much is I was not on Twitter much. And I think that for 2023, my resolution is going to be to cut back my social media time. I would like to cut it in half or even more. And here's what I'm realizing.
What are we cutting, though? Like, give me some, we have metrics on this?
Oh, I mean, it's 95% Twitter. It's 95% Twitter. But I would say that like the thing I realized is that the way to do this is to do something that I've never done before in my entire life. I'm going to turn on notifications for one particular person. I'm going to turn on notifications for Tom Bogert.
Oh.
Because the only thing I care about on Twitter these days is breaking MLS news. And obviously, after, you know, years of working his way up the ladder, Tommy's the most connected guy. I mean, he's pure New Jersey.
Yeah, he really is.
Can we get to the bit here at the end of this? Where's the butt?
No, there's no.
It's just all flattery, Tom. Like, we all have to stay in your good graces. Like, Lord knows what you could be breaking about us, like, any day now.
Yeah, this is, like I said, resplendent eyebrows, king of the MLS transfer world. I mean, what's next for you? What can you take over? I'm moving to New Jersey. Do I have to pay fealty to you? I don't know. I'll figure that out when I get there, I guess. Do you have one, Tom?
It's gonna joke about putting the phone down more, but I'm already gonna take that away, because, you know, these are nice things that are told to me when I don't put my phone down too much. So I'm good. Everything's great.
Okay. All right. Yeah. The feedback loop for you is like, pick your phone up more. Call more people. Personal time is for taking calls. Walk away from dinner with your girlfriend, all right? Don't walk those dogs. And if you do, make sure you're texting agents at the same time. So, look, one thing I will add on this as far as resolutions go, we are going to go through every MLS headline, every MLS nugget, every MLS thing you probably don't care about, but we do, or maybe you should care about on this show. We are not going to talk about U.S. soccer, Greg Berhalter, and what's going on with that. No good, very bad situation for all involved. I know that that's a huge news item for people right now. Enough people are talking about that, covering it. I don't want to be a part of that. I don't want extra time to be a part of that for the time being. If something changes, you'll hear it here first, obviously, on our approach to this. We are not going to talk about that other than just to acknowledge it on this show. You know where to find coverage of that if you want it. My hope
and just to make it clear, we don't have any insight into it. We don't have any insider information on all that. I think just go to the usual places, you know, Jeff Carlisle, Paul and Sam at The Athletic. They, you know, everybody would prefer to write about soccer, but when stuff like this breaks, those are the guys who cover stuff like this.
Again, this is bad for everyone. Nothing good here. So, I would throw out, you know, I throw out this. I also subscribe to Scuffed over the break. And have just absolutely loved that. And I'm sure that they will be all over this story with commentary. So go check them out as well. Before we get to the transfers, 2023 is the year of what in MLS? We all agreed 2023 is the year of Apple in MLS. Remember, MLS Season Pass subscription service is going to be available on February 1st to fans in over 100 countries and regions. Of course, you got live broadcasts and replays of every MLS regular season match, every MLS playoff and MLS Cup match, and every League's Cup match. You know I love that. You also have MLS Next Pro, MLS Next matches, English and Spanish broadcasts. You can get your home radio broadcast for your club. There's going to be the Whip Round Show, which I am fascinated, so excited to see what that looks like every single week in MLS, plus replays, highlights, analysis, other stuff on that as well. So February 1st is where you can get that. Go to MLSsoccer.com for more information. One last note, and it's for a legend here. I joked about your legend status, Tom, and I do believe that, but you don't you don't measure up to Kevin Payne and what he's contributed to our soccer culture in any way. I want to just
say, I know that. Thank you.
Yes. I want to say thank you to Kevin Payne, who passed away over these holidays. Our show wouldn't exist without the work that Kevin Payne does. Our love of this league and of this game in this country at a professional level would not be anywhere close to where it is without Kevin Payne. If you don't know who Kevin Payne is, longtime head executive with DC United, a guy who blazed trails and refused to do it on other people's terms, refused to let people who said they knew what soccer culture in this country was take the microphone when he was more connected to it than they were. You know, DC United's original sort of look is one of the most iconic things in our entire professional MLS soccer culture. And Kevin Payne refused to let that be something that the early designers of jerseys and nicknames mutiny in this league besmirched. He's a guy who led DC through many iterations and other clubs as well. I remember interviewing him when he was at Toronto FC around the Super Draft. He's had a number of hats, whether it's been in professional soccer or in youth soccer in recent years. He is an absolute legend in American soccer terms and North American soccer terms, Doyle, and he will be greatly missed.
Yeah, he will. He was the original best GM in MLS, the guy who had a vision for how to get it done, who worked with Bruce Arena to build what I think is still the most dominant dynasty in MLS history in that early DC United team. He also had some great quotes I think it was an oral history that the Athletic did it a few years ago, talking about how unique or distinct, I guess, the original team names and looks were. And he had this great quote talking to the designers, saying like, "I don't get this Tampa Bay quote mutiny. What's with the symbol?" And for those of you who don't know, the Tampa Bay's original symbol, Tampa Bay Mutiny's original symbol, was a weird looking bat. And this is Kevin Payne, relating that story. He says, they said to him, "Oh, it's a mutant bat. Okay, what does that have to do with mutiny?" And he says, "You know, mutiny, mutant." And then he literally explains to them, those are two different words with completely different root meanings. They just share some letters. What are you doing? Which is one of my favorite anecdotes about early MLS, about how DC United stood out for being... I'm not going to say authentic, but for having a different and more traditional look that was part of that team's identity and still is to this day. That said, like going back, man, I'm watching some Carlos Valderrama highlights from 25 years ago. Those Tampa Bay Mutiny original jerseys, those are pretty sharp, man.
I mean, look, I want one. Like, don't get me wrong. Am I on eBay regularly trying to get one?
I've got one. What? Yeah.
Probably not for sale, though, and that's I'm looking
we'll
for.
We'll see. I mean, we could talk terms after thing, but anyway, rest in peace, Kevin Payne. He was a legend in this league, and his influence will not be forgotten.
Absolutely. All right, let's get to it. What is the biggest story, transfer move, fill in the blank since we've been gone, Tom? We will start with you, and I want everyone at home to know that you didn't want to do this, and I twisted your arm. How is it not Cristiano Ronaldo to Sporting Kansas City? Please help me understand how real that was, because it doesn't feel real now. It feels like I'm sitting here writing in a Google Doc some, like, fever dream. I wake up in Vacaville, California, and I read a headline. I'm like, Ronaldo to Sporting Kansas City, and I fall back asleep and never think about that ever again in my life. But apparently it was real-ish.
Yeah, no, it was absolutely real. And like you said, I was dubious of it at first when I started to hear it. And then talking to numerous sources who all said the same thing without me having to lead them anywhere. So all of the details that I heard were able to be verified. And again, like, even if you don't believe me, ESPN's Taylor Twellman has a lot of it. And then Sam McDowell did a really good piece with the KC Star that again, it had more, even more details. But like, Sporting Kansas City were the first MLS team to the table to have the, not the idea, but to actually attempt to bring Cristiano Ronaldo to Major League Soccer and to Sporting Kansas City. So they were ahead of everybody else. So they kind of got, they were in with meetings even before that infamous interview Ronaldo gave to Piers Morgan. So before he was even technically a free agent, it was, hey, like maybe this is something that can make sense. And then they Ronaldo's camp requested another meeting. So, you know, the first pitch went well enough. They had numerous meetings, numerous discussions over a number of weeks. It was something that was really real. And part of the selling points were a minority owner, Patrick Mahomes, Kansas City Chiefs, absolute superstar. He was one of the selling points to, hey, how a global superstar lives in our city. Hey, LeBron James lived in Cleveland, and he was still a global superstar then. So that these were all kind of like the groundwork to convince Cristiano Ronaldo and his camp that, like, hey, this is a viable option. I don't know exactly how close it was. Who knows if maybe he was all along really leaning towards the Saudi Arabian, but I will tell you that Sporting Kansas City had plans for, all right, if it was real enough for if this happens, what does that look like in terms of different security on game days? What does that look like for training? What does that look like for operations and all of this secure, like whatever it is, like all of those little details that you don't go into planning unless something is really real. They were doing that again. He ended up signing in Saudi Arabia. I know that, again, the first that I was hearing of it, I was pretty dubious. So I understand the skepticism, but look, from numerous sources from myself, again, Twellman, Sam McDowell, all these people reporting it, like, these were real conversations, and this was a real thing. It wasn't just an email or a phone call and 1 5-minute gratuitous meeting. It was real conversations for a few weeks.
Look, when you have the opportunity as Cristiano Ronaldo to play across the street from Nebraska Furniture Mart, you have to consider it. It has to be a part of the calculus for you as to what comes next in your career. As it stands, we won't see him. Doyle, this occurred just as soon as I saw this. My first thought on this was that this is like the best mashup of just absurd MLS transfer season, but plausibly real thing that I've ever seen in my entire time covering this league.
So it's kind of a running bit that we have on the show whenever someone mentions a global superstar potentially coming to MLS. And look, Peter Vermees actually kind of addressed this in the article that Sam McDowell wrote for the KC Stars. Like, it's always about Miami, LA, New York, maybe Toronto, maybe Chicago, right? So we always kind of joke like, oh, yeah, you know, he'll be signing with Kansas City or Real Salt Lake or, you know, Houston. But like, apparently this happened, you know, and then
why do you keep saying apparently? What are we doing?
I mean, okay, fine. This happened. But then apparently, as per Sam's reporting in the KC Star, they came out and said, or he came out and reported, like, there are other European stars. Now, who knows how big a star that is, who are interested in coming to Kansas City, and Kansas City are interested in bringing in there. It does change the landscape. At the same time, I remain less interested in that than I am in the way the best teams have. Like, if the star, I would rather see the star be Kansas City's version of Ricky Puig than, you know, whatever 34-year-old who, you know, like, even if it's, unless it's like a Lewandowski level player, like, I would rather see them get these guys who maybe aren't quite good enough for Barcelona or Benfica or Bayern Munich, start competing for those guys. Because if you could maybe bring Ronaldo here, then you could probably bring those guys here. And I think that that's probably how Kansas City see it as well.
Oh, just all of it bizarre.
So does that mean, though, that we think that Messi is going to end up signing with Kansas City?
Would Kansas? I mean, look, I love Kansas City.
He doesn't press anymore. I don't think he would fit with the game model.
Peter doesn't press as much as he used to either. They want the ball, man. They want the ball. They're not that high pressing team that they were in like 11-12. I love Kansas City. There's still just a complete absurdity to me of Cristiano Ronaldo being here. Patrick Mahomes, I can understand. The man played college football at Texas Tech. I mean, he lived in West Texas. Like, after in West Texas, no offense, anybody who's currently listening in West Texas, you can live anywhere in the world and be like, these are good conditions for me. Like, my life has improved. It's still so out in space for me that I can't wrap my head around it. Let's hit some. Okay, one more thing.
I was just going to say, you talked about the Peter Vermees angle to this. I think that most of the people listening to this see him on the sidelines and his demeanor, his posture, everything, that he looks like a drill sergeant. He looks super serious and super, like, you know, can't have a joke, can't have a good time. I think that if this happened and the media circus that would have came with it, a lot more people would have realized that Peter Vermees is a funny dude. And like, when he's not on the sideline screaming at referees or using three different variations to say F off to whoever it was, the Vancouver assistant coach, I think a lot of people would figure out that he's a funny guy and he's got a really good personality.
I will also say to I don't know if anybody heard the buzzer there. So I just want to establish that this buzzer does not refute anything that Tom said, but my clothes are done drying. I just want to establish that there's a reason why a lot of guys stick and stay in Kansas City and want to be there, veteran guys. Peter and that entire organization is fiercely protective of the club culture they've created. That's why guys stay, but it's also why you see guys get pushed out pretty quickly if they don't match that culture. You know, when you see Benny come back and Ike come back and guys like that be a part of the organization and all these other sort of core dudes that have stayed for a long time, there's a reason for that. So I completely agree with you, Tom, in that, you know, look, if Peter doesn't want to be thought of as a drill sergeant, the flat top is maybe a tough way to brand yourself.
High and tight, baby.
But he is much more than that. He's one of the most interesting personable dudes in the entire league. Doyle, what's the biggest story transfer move, fill in the blank, since we've been gone in Major League Soccer?
Yeah, we're going to get into this more later, but like, when LAFC signed Aaron Long as a free agent last night, it was official. Some bum broke it on Twitter maybe 24 hours before that. My mentions were filled up with how can they possibly manage to do this? They have so much, you know, they committed on their cap and ball, and it's like they actually don't. If you look at the salary release from the players' union last September, I think it was, and you match that up with the guys who have left, like, they cleared out a DP slot, about $3 million worth of cap space, maybe actually a little bit more than that. They also just got $400,000 worth of GAM for the Latif Blessing trade. So they won the double last year. They brought back their two best DPs. They have Chicho Arango on an outrageously good deal. Same for Jesus Murillo. They still have Cifuentes and Palacios. Now that might not last. But anyway, they have the budget room to make big moves. And like when I was writing it in the pre-show, like how are we going to present this? This is kind of like the Dubs, the Golden State Warriors, when they won 73 games. And then that summer still had the cap room to add Kevin Durant. This is how tight or how clean that cap is for LAFC. They just don't have any bad salaries on that book. Now that might change. Like I think if they have to keep Gareth Bale and he takes up a DB slot, I think that's bad. So it might not be as flexible as all that, but this is still literally the best team in the league last year. Proved twice over with a ton of cap space. It hasn't all happened yet, but that is the biggest story in the offseason right now, as far as I'm concerned.
I think the other thing about this offseason going into the upcoming season is just the additional fronts, and yeah, it's just League's Cup, but you have all these other
things. Sorry, I have to interrupt. Anders wants me to urgently remind the people that while LAFC were the best team in the league, they were not officially the best team on the continent. That, of course, CCL winners, Seattle Sounders.
Well, and that is a perfect segue. As I was saying, there are more fronts to compete on in Major League Soccer. And if you have changes in, I don't know, maybe the playoffs or whatever comes our way, there may be more games. And so you need more depth. And if you want to be a top team in the league like LAFC does and established as, you need to have deep, talented rosters. And look at that additional front that the Seattle Sounders are on. So the biggest news for me this offseason, other than the 2023 match balls here, make some noise. Woo! It looks fine. Is that we now know MLS's and Seattle's path to Club World Cup glory. Club World Cup details, it's in Morocco, draw happening on January 13th. We'll cover that extensively. It's not a huge draw, just a couple little bumps there. First game, February 1st. So you have an opening game, like a qualifying game between the Oceania champions and the African champion runner-ups. So that'll get into four teams. Then the Sounders will be a part of that. Al Hilal, Casablanca, Seattle. Then Auckland City or Al Ahly, one of those teams will get through. And then it'll be single elimination, basically. So if the Sounders win, Real Madrid and Flamengo are on the other side of the competition in the semis. We could get a Seattle Sounders-Real Madrid game. Jackson Reagan could start against Real Madrid. Imagine that.
Electric.
Just think of that moment in this league's history. God, Nuhu against I don't care who.
There's nothing new there.
That's true. That's very true. Like, Nuhu was very good defensively once again at the World Cup.
But we need to see it. We got to see it again as many times as we can see it. This is, life is finite. Like, we don't know if we're going to get this opportunity again. Seattle Sounders in Morocco, full coverage right here. The final is February 11th. I'm just throwing it out there. I don't know if the Sounders will be involved, but I know what I hope for. All right, here's the update on them. Aaron Long did not happen for the Sounders, but Christian Roldan's close to a new contract. They got Hebert. What do we think about the Hebert trade for the Sounders, Doyle? Is that a...
I like it. No, it's a win-now move, right? They needed to upgrade their depth behind Raul Ruiz Diaz, who wasn't able to play a full year last year. They can play as many as 60 games this year if they max out everything. Now they won't, right? They're probably going to punt on, I don't know, like the Open Cup maybe, and who knows how deep a run they'll make in the League's Cup and all that. But like Eber's still really good when he's healthy, and now that three deep of Rui Diaz, Eber, and Freddy Montero, who was mostly effective last year though in limited doses, like that's really solid. I do think this is a thing that Bobby and David and I talked about a lot on the World Cup Daily Show that we did. Club and Country Today.
Wonderful show, by the way. Go subscribe to MLS Today to make sure you get more of that in 2023.
And so, like, every team should have a 6'5", Veghorst or Alan Gordon to bring off the bench for those kitchen sink moments late in the game. I still think the Sounders need that. But just in terms of quality they have now up front, and like basically everywhere on the field, they're two or three deep other than left back. It's still a really impressive roster, and Eber only makes it better.
All right, more moves to come. Looks like Joe Paulo will be back. That's huge for them. Obed Vargas, maybe. We have the Danny Leyva possible moves. I don't know if those rumors are real. A TBD on that one. Tom, any news on the Sounders outside of Bear? Is there any rumblings you're hearing, or is it kind of quiet as they prep to go to Morocco?
Yeah, more of the latter. You know, obviously, the Aaron Long thing was something that they were super interested in, and I believe that would have had to come with further moves to create the space. But yeah, like you said, Danny Leyva is in the process or has a Mexican passport. I apologize off the top of my head for forgetting. So that makes sense that there are going to be links to Liga MX and whether something like that happens. Doyle, you wrote about this, just looking at their central midfield depth chart. There's a lot of good players there, and
yeah,
even if they play 60 games, that's like six dudes for two spots. So, you know, it might make sense for somebody like that to leave. But again, it's just interest as far as has been reported. So we'll see.
All right. MLS Gone Wild hit us up and said, hey, guys, rank your top five intra-MLS moves of this offseason based on team need and player quality. So we did so. And our number one move, Doyle, was Matt Hedges to Toronto. You would think with all this Aaron Long hubbub going around, we might have chosen that one, but why did we choose Hedges Toronto as the most impactful interleague move?
Dallas's defense was really, really good last year. They gave up 37 goals, which I think was second overall in the league. Now, part of that was the structure that they put into place, but part of it was like Matt Hedges was healthy for the first time in a couple of years, and he was really, really good. He is a proven commodity at center back. He obviously defensively is excellent. He's one of the better passing center backs that we've had in the league, certainly over the past decade and even over the past couple of years, as center backs are being asked to do more and more. He's consistently done more and more with his distribution. Guys like that win. Toronto was a tire fire defensively last year. Now, part of that was they turned the ball over in bad spots a ton. It's funny, when they added Insigne and Bernardeschi, they got better defensively more than they got better in attack, because those guys they don't turn the ball over stupidly. But still, they needed a lot of help defensively. Hedges fits that. He obviously fits the win now mandate. He takes pressure off of Michael Bradley Bradley had to do everything in terms of distribution last year. Well, now they'll be able to break lines from the back line. It's just a perfect signing for them, man. Like, obviously there's no learning curve for the league as well. So like, yeah, this is like every box checked with one signing for Toronto.
Yeah, for 2023, it's really, really good. I do want to point out, though, at his age, he hasn't missed a lot. He's 32, and he hasn't missed a lot of time, but there are concerns about how that contract may age. It's 2 years guaranteed, but there is two option years that have automatic triggers. So, I think 2023, it's an absolute no-brainer, but just to kind of put on the horizon in case that this kind of accelerates in kind of the wrong direction in a few years.
Yeah, I mean, if it helps them win in 2023 and 2024, yeah, They'll happily eat those 25 and 26 options.
Completely agreed.
Happily.
Completely agreed.
All right, number two on our list was Aaron Long to LAFC. Tell us how this came about, Tom, because we hadn't heard LAFC in the mix for a while. There have been a lot of Inter Miami and Seattle. Boom, here come the champs.
Yeah, LAFC, frustratingly for somebody in my position, have been very good at keeping things under wraps. Like, we'll talk about it later, but the Croatian Youth International they signed, nobody got a sniff of that before they announced it. They almost got Gareth Bale through without anything. So Aaron Long, they were...
That was a dunk, though. That was a dunk by you right there.
Yeah, that wasn't even a humble brag.
No, you were hanging on the rim and be like, oh, you thought...
Somebody reported it. I don't know.
You still have it pinned to the top of your profile six months later, dude.
What do you want from me?
How many victory laps are you going to take?
As many as until my legs fall. LAFC were... And look, it's the same way that we talk about Alex Cowens, that all MLS teams... like should be looking into it. Like, a lot of MLS teams looked into the possibility of signing Aaron Long as a free agent. It's a no-brainer. Whether the interest and the money was quite the same for all the teams that looked into it, there was a lot of teams. So LAFC were one of many. For a while, there was the LA Galaxy was the obvious one because he's from Southern California. That was a team that was interested in him that clearly needed at center back. LAFC, I don't think that a lot of people deduced in terms of need and opportunity. And then Doyle just reset off the top of the show how, well, actually, this is how they have room in the salary cap to make something like this happen. So I think a lot of the confluence of those things and the idea of, hey, we can go get better by getting Aaron Long. So the talks went on for a while. The end, as far as it was conveyed to me, the MLS teams that were the closest were LAFC, who obviously signed him, Seattle Sounders, and Inter Miami. Sounders and Inter Miami made sense, and you know, we talked about it a little with Seattle. There was interest abroad. He rejected some offers from Saudi Arabia. Again, this is, I'm not sure if the money was the same or not. I'm not sure of some of those specifics, but again, it's somebody who's out of contract, who is, you know, in his prime, at the end of his prime, I guess, at 30 years old, a national team player. A lot of teams are going to look into this possibility. He ends up staying in MLS. He returns home to Southern California, and the rich get richer with LAFC.
Two-year deal they announced in their press release. So I don't see any option language in there, but, like, you know, two-year deal would take into where Matt Hedges is now, and Hedges got a really nice contract from Toronto, so there's still possibilities for Aaron Long after these 2 years. You would think that LAFC are going to try to win everything, and that's basically their pitch to him. Their center back depth right now, you have Chiellini, you have Long, you have Jesus Murillo. Daniil Maldonado was signed on loan from Honduras, the Honduran international. Of course, Mamadou Fall is still on loan, and you have Traore and Leone back there as well. Who's the starting duo, you think, opening day, Doyle?
Long and Murillo for me, pretty easily as well. But as we've talked about with other teams, they're aiming to play a lot of competitions, a lot of games. This gives Steve Cherundolo more opportunities to play three at the back, which he did at times last year. So again, if your four center back options are Aaron Long, Jesus Murillo, Giorgio Chiellini, and Maldonado, that's really, really strong.
Yeah, and keep an eye on Leone too. He's still just 18, so it's probably a year too soon for him. But he's one of the best youth national team center backs in the entire pool. The issue is that he's a dual national, and most of his youth national team appearances have come with the Mexican Federation. But he's a very good young player. He could factor in at some point this year.
A lot of dual national.
A lot of them.
I mean, from the Inter-Miami kid, Cremaschi, who's now with the Argentina U-20.
He didn't make the final cut.
Oh, he didn't? Oh, no,
so there's a sense that he's been called up for
the panic.
US.
Okay, nobody panic. Yeah, Houston Dynamo kid is in with the Colombian U-20s right now. He had been in the U.S. system. I mean, this is just only going to grow and grow and grow as our academies start to churn out players of this quality. Number three on our list of the five most impactful moves within MLS so far this offseason: Giassi Zardes as a free agent to Austin. Austin second in the West. Austin had pretty notable issues up top as far as, like, who is the starting striker? Is it Maxi Arruti? Okay, well, he has his moments. We know that about Maxi. Love him as a player. Probably don't love him if you're a contender as an every game starter. And Musa Gite just hasn't got it done yet, but still young. So Zardes comes in, ton of experience with Josh Wolf, has a team that creates chances: Driussi, Fagundes, TBD, and Rigoni. But a guy that Josh Wolf knows and trusts as a free agent. This is a big opportunity, I think, for Zardes. It's a big opportunity for Austin to get this one right and maybe raise their ceiling just a little bit, as well as their floor. So that's our number three there for Giassi Zardes. Number four was Aaron Herrera to Montreal. Is there any fallout on this one on the RSL side, Tom? And is there any other noise around Montreal? Because Jackson Mendez is a name. I don't know who's linking him, but I keep seeing it. Alan Sonora, it keeps being linked with Montreal. Maybe that's more real. Merlo is on that one. What do you think of the Aaron Herrera to Montreal move overall?
I thought that was a really, really good trade by Montreal. Look, Herrera's one of the best fullbacks in the league. He's obviously MLS proven. He's somebody who's you know, top five at his position. He fits their system well. He played right center back a little bit for RSL, and when that kind of, like, Andy Nahar type of right center back, where it's like, you know, you're going to push forward as much as you can. But I'd assume that he's going to play right wing back, where, again, he's going to push forward.
Wait. Don't assume that.
Fair enough.
Who was Andy Nahar's coach when Andy Nahar kind of invented that role? It was Hernan Losada, who's the new head coach for CF Montreal. I expect that Herrera is going to be right center back. Like, the more I've thought about it. And it's a perfect fit, Tom.
Yeah, no. And I'm glad you put that in. Again, so he can play either one of those. And this is getting a really top level type of talent in a trade within MLS. Like, you look back at some of the other successes they've had on the trade market, like Aaron Herrera is more proven than George Mihailovic was when they traded for him, than Romel Kyoto was, than Mason Toy was.
It was more proven than Alistair Johnston was.
Yeah.
Like Alistair Johnston was a good MLS player, and Montreal turned him into a best 11 caliber player and a guy who got sold for $3.5 million to a Champions League. Aaron Herrera has been better in MLS than Alistair Johnston, right?
Yeah.
So, like, this is as proven as it gets in terms of getting a right back or right center back or right wing back, guy who can play all three. And they got him for 500,000 of GAM and an international roster slot, man. It's just incredible work.
Yeah, I agree. I think that part of the valuation between him and Alistair Johnson went for $1 million plus a 10% sell on. Alistair Johnson's contract was significantly cheaper than this, even when he signed a new contract. But again, like that's just kind of like the other side. It's like the devil's advocate side. Like, again, you pay Aaron Herrera, like he's expensive because he's really, really good. So I think that this is just a fantastic trade by Montreal.
What is we had somebody hit us up, and this is probably the best place to do it. We won't save it for later. Alex Simpson said, I'd love for you guys to have a convo about where the RSL front office is heading. There seems to be a lack of clarity on direction for the club. We don't have any signings yet, only losses up to this point, and we barely snuck into the playoffs. Is there any smoke coming out of the RSL camp?
I don't have much. I think that fans are right to be questioning or curious as to, you know, what's going on in terms of incomings. Like this time last year, they got the new ownership, everybody got benefit of the doubt. All right, like, and then by the time it was mid-February and they hadn't really made a whole lot of additions, we were all kind of asking questions. But all right, like, new ownership, all this, are setting budgets, everything. Like, it's January 5th, preseason opens in a few days, and they have a very, very incomplete roster. So again, I think that the fans are pretty fair to be wondering, hey, what's next? Who knows? Like, I was expecting Sergio Cordova to have been back like 8 weeks ago.
And he's like, not coming back, right? They just announced it this morning.
Is that right? So yeah,
I think he's going back to Augsburg.
Well, yes. I mean, he's still with Augsburg, but like they can still work out a loan at any point between
now. They know somebody at Augsburg. Huh?
Yes, yeah. They know somebody. Yeah, the owners are on good terms. Yeah.
Again, like that was the one that felt like a layup ish, and like, all right, this isn't the most exciting move, but it'll probably happen. And then it just hasn't happened. Like, there is not much coming in for Real Salt Lake, and you know, they have a lot of flexibility and room to make additions, but they have a lot of needs as well.
I just want to note it, like, RSL went hard in the super draft.
Yeah,
right? They came out of that with two generation Adidas guys. There's been talk that they are, one of the generation Adidas guy is a former RSL Academy kid. So like there's been talk that they're going to refocus on that, like creating and maintaining that pipeline. So maybe that's what we're seeing at play here. And like, I wouldn't hate seeing that at all, but you do have to supplement it. If they do get Cordova back, I like the, you know, 4-2-3-1 with Cordova up top and Demir Krylock, who should be healthy again, underneath. I like Ruiz and Loffelsund and Ojeda in central midfield. So even though it feels frustrating, we look at RSL every season and we're like, oh, this team is going to finish 11th place in the Western Conference. And then they're like 6th or 7th, you know? So even though I don't really get it at this point, and I do think they kind of took a bath on the Herrera deal, I'm not going to panic yet, because we have a history of maybe overreacting in the wrong direction to moves or lack thereof from RSL.
Here's the thing about the Herrera deal. If you're sending him there, and you have to expect a lot of that was contract shedding because he had a pretty sizable number, what are you doing with that space? I mean, that's the logical question that your fans are going to ask about that. You know, I get the pipeline stuff, but there's parity in this league. You can win. They've shown that. They are going to have an opportunity to be the MLS ETR laminator of the year, I might expect. the team that we maybe pick to finish low and then is putting in our face.
Trey will 100% laminate.
Break it. I mean, he printed 100%. Things out for Pecky in a press conference. So we got to.
But he'll do it in a kind way. I think that it'll be like, before you know it, he sliced you open. And it's like, oh, he was smiling the whole time. Shout out to Trey.
Number five on this one for our top five inter MLS moves of the offseason so far. Kevin Cabral to Colorado, Doyle. But maybe also you could reframe that as Kevin Cabral out of L.A.
Yeah, that's what it is. Like, I get Colorado's their angle here. It's kind of like the Julian Carranza thing where Miami just badly misused him for 2 years. And then Philly got a $6 million player for 500,000 worth of GAM, and like Carranza lived up to that. That is, I think, what Colorado's trying to do with Kevin Cabral. They paid, I think, $1 million worth of GAM over 2 years and took on half of his salary hit, which is about, I want to say, $800,000. So like, and this is a guy who the Galaxy paid $5 million for. So the idea is we're paying 20 cents on the dollar. It's not a risk I would have taken. Kevin Cabral looked like, even though he clearly knows where goals happen and like gets into spots to flub high quality chances that like lesser players never even are anywhere near, but like he still flubs those chances, man. Like, and I think finishing is real. He looks broken to me, so I wouldn't have taken that risk, but I get it. But the bigger story is the Galaxy were probably the fifth best team in the league last year, but we all looked at them and said, there's kind of a hard ceiling on it because two of their DPs, Cabral being one and Douglas Costa being the other, were so bad in 2022. Well, now they opened up one of those DP slots. Getting rid of Cabral is potentially huge if they can go out and get a best 11 caliber winger. Now, the reason we have this at number five and number one is because historically, in recent history for the Galaxy, if they can get a best 11 caliber, anything is a massive if. They have not scouted well. Yes, they got Ricky Pooge. He's amazing, but that's not scouting. That's just having a Rolodex. If a guy like that falls into their lap, they're going to be in really good shape and we'll move this up to number one. But like, we do need to see that other shoe drop and we do need to see it happen in a way that actually does improve the Galaxy, because there's just no guarantee with this team.
Oh, by the way, we need to see that, unless it's coming from within the league, happen in this window.
Yep.
Because the summer.
That's a good call. That's a very good call.
Summer. Yes, summer's a great time to be in LA, but you know what? It's a one-way flights out for the Galaxy in the summer. All right, Lateef and Romney were on this list as well. They didn't quite make it. We'll talk about those moves for the Revs here in a second. Do we need to go more in-depth on LAFC here? I think we've kind of hit it pretty hard. We should.
I think that there's a little bit more for us to dig into.
All right, peel back the onion.
Run us through it fast, Tom, okay. Because we've spent too much time on it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's fair. So Stipe Buic, the 20-year-old Croatian youth international, he's somebody who was on the 40-man shortlist, not a longer list, not exactly a shortlist. He was still one of the players who was recognized by UEFA as a potential Golden Boy nominee. Like that's pretty significant. The deal was, you know, in the neighborhood of $5.5 million, whatever it is. LAFC, like clubs that I've talked to around the league, they thought it was going to be more. Like they thought, you know, there was Manchester City that was interested, and they've brought in a lot of talent to put in their U21 team and say, all right, we'll sign 30 guys. If five of them make the first team, then like we've hit. So LAFC signed him. And part of the reason why he was so interested in this project was that like in MLS, you can't do that. You can't just be a numbers game, like a hedge fund where they go, okay, five of these guys are going to hit. Who cares about the other ones? Like LAFC are going to work their best to try to make this work, and in a few years move him on to continue development, move him on to Europe. A lot of Croatian fans were shocked that he came here. Like he was one of their like brightest young talents. So the idea was you go from Hajduk to another a top five European league, or say Manchester City U21s or whatever it is. So I think that we're not making enough of this signing because none of us really know what his like trajectory was. And I don't know, maybe if this was an Argentine youth international for $5.5 million, we'd be talking more about it. So I think that this is a big one. And do you want me to just keep going on some of the other things?
I just want to jump in really quick, make two points. Hajduk Split, the team that he comes from, like this is one of the powerhouses in the Balkans. They're always putting great young players into Champions League teams around Europe. So that's huge in that one. From a cap perspective, he's a U22 initiative roster slot. So despite the $5 million fee, despite whatever his salary is, which we know can only go up to, I think,
$650,000,
he hits the cap at $150,000. He hits the cap at $150,000. That's why it makes so much sense for so many of these teams to not go completely over the top with all three DPs, because it just gives you so much flexibility if you could fill all three of the U22 initiatives in terms of getting more talent in and in terms of managing your cap space. Sorry, Tom, go ahead.
No, and even just to piggyback on that, like I think that that's going to be teams with that have the confluence of really good scouting and more money than other teams in the league. This is a way where you can have a market inefficiency and sign a $5.5 million player that hits your cap like this. They've done really well. I don't think Jose Cifuentes and Diego Palacios were signed the season before the U22 initiative was introduced, but they were, you know, essentially U22 initiative slots. They did really well. This is not the case. There are a lot of other teams who kind of haven't, because these kinds of players are difficult to identify and adapt to a new league at such a young age. That's the nature of this mechanism. That's why the league wanted to encourage teams to do more of it.
Speaking of Cifuentes and Palacios, any news, any updates there? I mean, are those guys going to stick around?
Good transition.
It kind of felt like at least one, if not both, were going to go.
So my overwhelming expectation is that Jose Cifuentes is going to be gone. As far as I'm told, per sources, there are active talks right now with other with European clubs for Cifuentes. I think he would make a lot of sense in the Premier League. Teams, you know, lower in the table, or like Brighton have a bunch of Ecuadorians. He was linked with Brighton in the summer. You know, teams like Bournemouth, they can afford what his transfer fee will be. I don't even want to put a number on it because I don't want to speculate because I don't know for sure, but it'll be pretty significant. So I'm assuming that Jose Cifuentes is going to be transferred this window sooner rather than later. But again, you never know until a deal gets done. In terms of some other guys, Christian Tello is out of contract. I'm told that there are still talks between Tello and LAFC about potentially returning, but this is something I also reported 2 months ago. And who knows, I guess, if a deal gets done or not. And then as far as Sebastian Mendes, per sources, not optimistic that he returns to LAFC. He was at the World Cup with Ecuador as well. I'm going to assume that he's going to land in Europe, but again, we'll see until something like that is final.
Latif Blessing also out. Gave a ton to this club. Was there from the very start. I remember announcing his name in the first expansion draft for LAFC. 400K in allocation, headed to LAFC for him, and he's going the other way to the Revs. We'll talk about that in just a second from the Revs' point of view, but he was a little bit of a bit part player for them, but an important part of their history. As of late, Mateus Klich to DC United looks like it's going to get done. You've been reporting on this for a long time, Tom. So once again, we'll get out of your way and then we'll discuss what it might mean for DC United.
Yeah. So Mateus Klich, Leeds United, quickly became a legend in 4.5 seasons with the club. He's a fan favorite. He fell out of favor this year under Jesse Marsh after Tyler Adams and Mark Rocco were signed, and he wanted to go somewhere where he could play more. Look, talks have been ongoing for a while. I reported back in like December 9th that agreements generally were reached. Like nothing was, you know, being drawn up or finalized, but that's when it was more than just interest and talks. It was like, okay, if he leaves Leeds, he's going to go to DC United. There wasn't really like a big rush because preseason doesn't start until this week in MLS. Jesse Marsh was still hoping to convince Klich to stay as like a key squad player, somebody who's respected around the club. But all the final details and everything got sorted and agreed over the last 2 weeks. It was agreed that he was going to play one more game for Leeds. That was Wednesday night. A 2-2 draw against West Ham. He came off the bench. And it was really cool to see he got to do a lap of honor. He got a guard of honor from the players. The fans all stuck around and were chanting. Like, again, this guy is an absolute character. He's a fan favorite. He played in, like, I have the numbers here. Sorry. 159 of a possible 168 games from 2018 to 2022. He was a driving force behind them getting promoted to the Premier League for the first time in a long time. And he was a crucial part to them avoiding relegation the last two seasons. This is a 32-year-old. He's going to be a really good player. We'll see what he looks like in MLS. Like, I don't know. I think that he's going to be very good here. We'll just see how many, I guess, goals and assists he contributes. Because again, when you're spending the significant outlay or, you know, roster space for a central midfielder at this age, you hope that he's going to add goal contributions. He did that when they were in the championship more so than when they were in the Premier League, and he's been playing a little bit deeper. So, again, I all the benefit of the doubt to this move. I think Klich's going to do really well here.
Minimum of 5 new starters, I'd say, for DC. Doyle, new left back, the Iraqi national teamer from Scandinavia, Derek Williams in on trade, Tyler Miller, goalkeeper, or Alex Bono, I don't know which one it'll be. Who on at right Miller. Back? Klich. I mean, Paulson and Ravel Morrison, who I don't know if he'll stick around or not. It sounds like things went south pretty quickly with them. Good thing he gave him a 2-year contract, DC. That was well done. And then I guess Benteke, you could almost count as a new starter too from last year. It's like, man, they're yo-yoing. Like, they could be, I don't know if they have a high upside necessarily. Maybe in some world they do. This is a team with like a crazy variable floor and ceiling to me.
It doesn't feel like the ceiling is that high. It doesn't. But we'll see. I've been wrong before. I thought Wayne Rooney did really well with Derby County to keep them invested in the season, even after they suffered that massive penalty, points deduction. He kept them, you know, I mean, they would have been mid-table, and they almost got out of that relegation battle. I thought it was a really good job, but... man, there's been some turnover with this DC team since he took over. They've culled the front office. There's still no official GM. It looks like he's calling all the shots. I don't love this roster. Maybe it'll come together though. What do I know?
What do we know? That's the million-dollar question of the MLS offseason, and we will continue to show you how much we know and don't know as we make our predictions leading into 2023. Here's one from Taylor Twelman. Keep an eye on Olivier Giroud. Turned down the latest offer from Milan. Has real interest in coming to MLS and is currently exploring a few teams. 36 years young is Olivier Giroud. Is this real at all, Tom? Could this be real? Tracy Edwards in Nashville says, is there any chance Olivier Giroud arrives in Nashville this month, or will we have to wait until the summer? If summer, by the time Gary properly vets him for defensive acumen, it'll be Labor Day before he ever sees the field. Gotta love the sense of humor in Nashville.
But it's sense of humor, but I love the framing of the question. Oh, we're going to sign Olivier Giroud. Is it just going to be this month, or is it going to be in the summer?
Well, they just opened up a DP spot. Ake Loba's out.
Yeah, I think that Olivier would fit really well there. I'm a huge Olivier Giroud fan. I've been for a long time. I think that his game will age well. I think it would be very expensive to bring him here. I don't know.
To be fair, it's already aging well. He's 36 years old.
Yeah,
but.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and he's still doing it at a high level with AC Milan and obviously at the World Cup. I don't think that Nashville are going to be the team that tries to bring him, if any. But again, I'm hoping to talk this into reality. I really love Olivier Giroud. I think he'd be awesome for this league.
Who would you send him to, Doyle, if you could have your druthers? Olivier Giroud and MLS. I mean, Toronto FC could be fun with the two Italians.
Toronto would be fun. My initial thought was Nashville, just because, you know, they cross a ton, and Olivier Giroud is legendary in the air. But they all, and like, they don't ask a ton defensively from their forwards, and Olivier Giroud does not defend much anymore. I don't know. This is another one I'm gonna play a wait and see before I burn too much of my energy.
All right, I'll burn some. NYCFC doesn't have a nine. You could have Magno and Pereira, maybe Santi on the wing. New England, boy, you have some buyer's regret on Vrioni, because if you could get him as your center forward and extend your championship window with Heel, and you have Barrero, and they re-signed Nacho Gil, but you have Bayon Jones whipping in crosses on the wing. That could be funny. Might they play, you know, three in the back and then just get those wingbacks up? That could be fun. So there's a couple teams I'll throw out there as possible Olivier Giroud landing spots. We don't have to talk about Ake Loba and Mazatlan, but is that the biggest bust ever? Yes or no in MLS?
Yes.
I think so too, based on
the amount of money they spent to get two goals and no assists over 2 years, and considering how close they were to being a truly elite team, contenders. Like they made what, the Eastern Conference Finals in 2021, right?
I believe so.
Yeah.
No, conference finals. They lost to Philly in penalties. Mm-hmm.
Right. If they had an elite number nine, come on, $7 million. This is the biggest bust ever.
Okay. Daniel Gosdag, not a bust. Got his DP deal coming off that MVP finalist season. Dave Goss, big Daniel Gosdag guy. I believe he had him on his Golden Boot team. Didn't help him in the end, unfortunately. I'm still in the process of getting my trophy made, so I'll reveal when the time comes. 22 goals, 10 assists last season. Philly, Doyle, could have three DPs on opening day.
I mean, they will, right?
Well, they were going to last year until Jamiro Montero got traded. But
we knew that was going to happen. But yeah, they're going to have three DPs on opening day. They sold Paxton Aaronson, but that's basically it so far. They probably will sell Owen Burke as well, right? But they probably will sell Kai Wagner, right?
So the latest I've got on that is that just there's not a whole lot happening right now, and he'll be here for preseason unless something kind of changes. Look, he's been ready to go back, and the club have known that as well. The club aren't going to stand in his way, but you know, just no, if no offers come. If no real offers come, like I thought Leeds were going to do it, but Jesse Marshall and them went for a Red Bull Salzburg left back. That was already made official. We'll see if anything happens. But right now, like, the market isn't really spinning for Kai Wagner.
So if RB Salzburg sold their left back, they're potentially in the market for a left back, or they have something from, because like Kai Wagner would make a lot of sense in terms of on field, though he is obviously older than RB Salzburg. Open and shut, no interest there then.
Yeah, as far as I know, I mean, I guess I don't want to be too binary about it. But yeah, so again, like, maybe something happens this month. Again, I feel silly for pretty much the past two transfer windows, and I still, you know, will argue on my side of, yeah, all of this is true, that there was interest, and both parties were all ready for something to happen, and just nothing's happened. I guess that happens sometimes. Look, I mean, I don't know, what would it cost to say, hey, just stay here and be a star here? Like, is there a possibility for a new long-term contract? Who knows? We'll see. Again, I'm surprised that the market isn't moving for Kai Wagner, because I think that the club would be ready to say, okay, we're not going to hold you ransom for X amount of million, but like, we'll work with you to make something happen, and just we'll see.
So the Gosdog story is a big deal for Daniel Gosdog, and you expect him to stay anyway, but maybe the bigger story for Philly is that Jim Curtin's in the final year of his contract.
Yeah. So that's something I wanted to hit on here. It's flying under the radar. I was reminded of it at some point during the season last year. I figured that they just sorted it this offseason. But again, the reigning MLS Coach of the Year, Philly Union legend Jim Curtin, is in the final year of his contract. There isn't a lot of worry on both sides. The working relationship, obviously, between Jim and the front office and ownership is really, really strong. There will be talks, meetings, or whatever, to hammer this out or try to hammer this out soon. So again, I expect everything to go well, but you know, I think that it's important to have on the radar that, again, one of the most well-respected coaches in the league, the reigning MLS Coach of the Year, is entering the final year of his contract.
All right. Okay. What's going on in NYCFC? We'll talk free agents in just a second, because two starters on the back line and in goal, Alex Collins and Sean John, are still unsigned. Eber out, perhaps Santi not returning as well. If Alex Collins doesn't come back, Doyle, which is being reported, the offer from NYCFC didn't meet his, I don't know, what is it, his expectations? I mean, you're talking about a team that's now lost Maxi Morales, their talisman, and now it feels like this kind of, like this just list of starters from a team that was among the best in MLS for the past 6 years.
Yeah, so I mean, Tati's still on loan. He's gone. James Sands still on loan. He's gone. Even if those loans aren't exercised, purchase options aren't exercised on those loans, those guys aren't coming back. We already kind of knew that, though. Eber is gone. As you mentioned, Santi for now is gone, though I do think that they will work to try to get him back. Cacha Acevedo, who was CFG property in New York on loan, he left NYCFC. And now he's in Bahia, I believe, on loan. As you said, Collins is out of contract. It does not look like they're going to re-sign him. I think that would be an obvious mistake. It seems chances are better that they retain Sean Johnson, which they should. Anton Tinnerholm is gone, though they have just made a new signing there. Malte Amundsen is still around for at least one more year. It's an entirely new team, because they still have Keaton Parks and Alfredo Morales, and those guys are the base of a potentially very good central midfield. They still have the best winger core in the league with Talis Magno, Gabby Pereira, Thiago Andrade, and I guess maybe Matias Pellegrini will live up to it. But it's like they climbed the mountain in 2021, and then they started climbing back down really, really quick. And especially with Maxi leaving, 2023 is a new era for NYCFC. I am not going to bet against them. CFG have done a better job scouting and a better job leveraging a global network than any of the other MLS teams that have access to something like that. That's how you end up with players like Talis Magno and Gabby Pereira and you know, it, go on down the list, man. So I think they'll figure it out, but it's going to look very different, and it's going to make it hard for us to do season previews with NYCFC this year, because we're going to be kind of flying blind. Like, this is very clearly going to be a team that we have a much better understanding of come like mid-May or even June than we have when the season starts in February, just because there are so many known unknowns on top of ever-present unknown unknowns.
All right, I thought that was well summed up by Doyle there, but I still have questions. Tom, maybe you can answer them. Alex Collins, Sean John, is Alex Collins really definitely not coming back? Is there like no room here? Do you know anything about that? And what's going to go down with Sean John?
I'm not sure. So Alex Collins, there's been reports out there that he's not coming back. I've heard from just kind of around the league that that seems to be true. I've heard that, you know, NYCFC are looking for a left-footed center back. And if you're re-signing Alex Collins, you don't really need to look for a left-footed center, but left-footed, left-sided, either one, just whatever works here. So I think that, again, we've talked about it. You guys have talked about it in the show. I've talked about it in the show. All MLS teams should be looking at Alex Collins. Obviously, he's going to have interest in Mexico and maybe even in Europe. I think he's going to have plenty of options. I really have no idea what kind of happens there. With Juan Johnson, again, so Callan Johnson and Long, for me, were pretty clearly the top three free agents on the market. Long just signed. We're talking about Callan's and Sean Johnson, as we're here a few days away from teams starting to report for preseason, he is still also unsigned. If I had to guess, I'd think that he comes back. I don't know that for sure. There's nothing agreed. There's nothing like close or whatever, as far as I know, at least. But it makes the most sense because NYCFC want to keep him. They can most easily pay him. And, you know, I haven't heard a lot that's moved in terms of like Europe or other clubs. There should be other clubs in MLS that I'm sure are interested and should be trying. Toronto is one that comes to mind. Now Doyle and Weeby, you guys have talked about Chicago as well. But yeah, so I'd assume that NYCFC, if I had to guess, Evan Johnson's going to come back to NYCFC. But again, I want to be careful. I don't have necessarily inside information on that. I don't have that as a fact. I'm just kind of saying my educated guess.
Where would you go in MLS if you were Alex Collins, Doyle? What would be like your number one destination?
It depends on what you want. Do you want money? Do you want stability? Do you want big city life? Do you want affordable property? Do you want to win?
Bike lanes, you know, all so that.
We're talking Kansas City, baby. Let's go.
Yeah, we're barbecue, not talking. Well, actually,
fountains on every corner.
He would be an incredible get for Kansas City, actually. Like that would make a ton of sense. Mm-hmm. Even though they re-signed Fontas, Collins would be a perfect fit there. Cincinnati, man.
Cincy, yeah.
Like Cincy's, they look like a contender to me, and they are thin on the back line. They opened up about $3.5 million worth of budget space this offseason by declining some contracts, letting guys like Ronald Monterita, Alan Cruz, Jeff Cameron, letting those guys walk. I would have Cincy in like eight-tier contender status if they were able to get Alex Collins.
And they've been playing that three-man, three-center-back setup, and Collins is pretty well set to be the left side of that with Miazga in the middle. So we'll see how that goes. I agree. Cincy would be a great spot for him. Miami obviously need a center-back as well. Seattle seem to be in the market, though they might have to move Xavier Arriaga if they want to do something like
by
that.
By the way, just reported by Cesar Luis Merlo, who, you know, doesn't often miss, that the Sounders are trying to get a deal done for Juan Dineno.
I was just reading that. It seems like it said they looked into it and a formal offer never came.
Okay.
Dineno, in case you've forgotten, Pumas, CCL, menace. All right, let's keep it going here. Two moves that have not gone under the radar because, you know, look, nothing goes under our radar. Latif Blessing and Dave Romney of the Revs. Well, I think these are just really, really, really smart moves by a team that had a boatload of allocation cash from sales. You got to use it somehow to go out and get these guys for basically under $1 million total in GAM at two positions you desperately need depth and experience. And your title window, as I said, I mean, it's now.
Yeah.
Carlos Gil is here now. You need to win now. Like Latif Blessing, the midfielder, the ball winner that they've been missing.
Yeah.
Dave Romney, left-footed center back. They needed depth and quality and experience there. He's 29. They go get him.
Yeah, I think both these guys end up starting. Now, the question I have with Latif is you're probably going to play him as a number eight in that setup in the 4-2-3-1 behind Carlos Gil next to Matt Polster. And he does have a lot of the skill set that you would look for. He's never really played as the number eight, though. Remember, he was a winger. He was a center forward even. Then he came to LAFC and suddenly, you know, it was a revelation that he could play as this pressing ball winning number 10. And he was really great at that, specifically doing the treat every 30-70 like it's a 50-50. And his ability to win those, his ability to cover ground, his ability to, you know, instantly transition from having won the ball to playing forward, either off the dribble or with a pass. That's all like they weaponized that so incredibly in that 2019 team. You have to be more responsible with the types of challenges you get into as a number eight because you just have fewer players behind you. Now, Latif's a smart player. He's already shown he can adjust from one position to another. He's really good at finding space between the lines in build out. So like he's always receiving the ball in space. That's like really, really clever. So I don't think he will struggle on the attacking and possession side of the ball. I just worry that he's going to find himself in a lot of 30-70s. And even if you're God tier at winning those, you still lose most 30-70s that you go into. And those turn into transitions in the other direction. So that is the only issue that I have potentially with that acquisition and the idea that Latif is going to play as a number eight. Romney is just easy. Like that's a really, really good signing for a team that struggled in center defense last year. It gives them a good three-man rotation of Romney, Henry Kessler, and Andrew Farrell. A lot of
Christian McCoon they acquired too, so he's sort of waiting in the wings as a younger option.
Yeah, maybe.
Set myself up for that.
A lot of experience there. Like the Revs addressed two of their needs. I still think that they have a little bit more work to do to get to elite tier. I don't love Rioni and Gustave Bow as both DPs. I don't think they can play together in a high level team. So they might want to figure something like that out. But like they did get better from those two moves for sure.
I will say we've talked about Nashville a little bit, but losing Romney is a blow for them. He's played a ton of games, but they have been pretty open about moving guys that they think they can replace. And Senior Leche is the replacement for Nashville. Jack Mayer, Mr. Milk, who apparently drinks a lot of milk. So let's see.
That's some Midwestern stuff right there.
Not drink milk has literally never drunk. I do not drink milk. It's not a thing for me. I can't understand people who do. Getting the nickname Senior Leche puts you in a mindset spot that I just can't get into. I just can't understand how you would ever get that nickname, but that's just me. Inter Miami signed an attacking midfielder forward, Nicholas Stefanelli, out of AIK in Sweden, 28-year-old Argentine. He's bounced around a ton, been all over South America, multiple leagues, and AIK has been sort of his spot there. Seems like a guy who could play across the front line, depth piece for them. Mike Ryan from the Levitard Show, I believe. He's a Miami guy. Keeps saying that Miami just aren't out of Messi. And Michelle Kaufman says there is no word yet on Messi. Fab Rubano reported that there's a verbal agreement for him to extend with PSG. But Mike Ryan's saying there's more upside for him in Miami. And you would think that's like a David Beckham-style deal. You know, Beckham famously, of course, got a great option on an expansion team, but also got revenue share. Essentially, and you'd think Lionel Messi's not signing for something less than David Beckham is. So let's not put that one to bed. Another rumor with Miami, Michelle Kaufman again over at the Herald. Says reports out of Brazil that Miami are in talks with 21-year-old Internacional attacking midfielder Mauricio. I know nothing. Transfer fee reportedly would be in $50 million range. I know nothing other than what I just read. So if something comes of that, we will hit it. Daniel Tapp wants us to talk about the breakdown of all the moves Atlanta's made in the past few days. So here those are. Per Fabrizio Romano, Alan Franco to Sao Paulo on loan. He was brought in after Gabriel Heinze was brought in. Per Felipe Cardenas at the Athletic, Marcelino Moreno would be loaned to Coritiba, which is in Brazil as well. Emerson Heineman in Atlanta shook hands and parted ways. They are shedding salary cap, and they're doing it quickly, and that is not very surprising given Garth got in there and looked around and said, well, we probably clear some space out here. What do you, any thoughts on what Atlanta's doing, Doyle, Tom?
I just think the Marcy Moreno one is interesting because if they're able to get his salary off the books and maybe recoup some of the transfer fee that they spent on him, that gives them $1 million worth of game, which is useful for a team that's rebuilding. I think that Marcy Moreno is a really good player. I think that he, like, if I was running the Rapids or the Dynamo or, you know, whatever rebuilding team, like that, I would have offered more GAM. I would have said, we'll take the salary and we'll offer you twice as much GAM as you would get from just selling him to a team in South America.
What kind of role within MLS do you think he would thrive in?
I think you put him in a 4-4-1-1 and give him the Hani Mukhtar role.
So what about Montreal? You have Torres and you have Kyoto behind Kamara.
That would make a lot of sense as well. Yeah. But maybe they like they've been linked to Alan Sonora so many times, like maybe they just weren't interested in it. But like the overarching point I'm making here is, did they need to get the transfer fee back more? Like, what is more value to them as a club, getting the transfer fee back more or getting twice as much GAM to build this roster out? And Tom is dying to talk, so go ahead, Tom.
I wanted to supplement that he's loaned. Like, there is no allocation money coming in from that. It's just getting the money off the books. There is a purchase option that could come in a year, but unless that there's a structure with a loan fee, which I'd be surprised at with the club that's buying them, then they're not getting any additional GAM in terms.
So could this have just been like he wanted to go back to South America and like their hands were tied, like they
did him a solid.
Yeah,
I haven't heard that as a line. All I heard all offseason was that he's going, Franco's going, and they're working on Joseph.
Yeah. Well, TBD on Joseph, but
that's the big one, man. That
opening
is
up
very,
some
very
cap.
Big one.
They still have a buyout.
It's fair. That's fair. Here's some other random ones. We'll just start running through it. If you don't have any thoughts, feel free not to share. I mean, we're an hour and 10 minutes in, but I'm pretty sure, I don't know, maybe our listeners have been in the MLS news desert and they're just looking for any sip of water they can get. Poyo FC stan account. Don't know what Poyo FC is. I don't know why you'd stan them, but they are. Talk about Austin's defense, please. We lost Gabrielsen, but we got Viisanen instead. Was that a decent replacement? Leo Viisanen from, I believe, from Elfsborg. But he's a Finland international center back. Gabrielsen's going back to Norway. Family issues pulling him back home. So any thoughts on this one? I know nothing of Viisanen at all, although the profile seems decent.
The best case is if it is a one-for-one in terms of – because Gabrielsen was very good last year, and he was something that they needed in terms of adding another center back that helped stabilize him to go up the table. So he's got big shoes to fill.
Yep. Okay, Matt Baker hit us up. What's up, Matt? Good to see you in St. Louis for the super draft. Doyle had in his article, but St. Louis signed a starting center defensive midfielder and Najibullah Blom, and you guys covered us needing that at the super draft. And, of course, Lutz Fahnenstiel also teased that in his appearance on the show. It looks like that GAM they acquired was put to good use. Tom, do you have details on the transfer fee and contract? And then Doyle, I would ask you what you think of the signing. If you think anything, I will read this quote from Lutz Fahnenstiel. We're excited to bring a young South African national team player like Blom to our squad in St. Louis. His ball-winning, super-aggressive warrior qualities as a central defensive midfielder match what we're looking for in our philosophy.
I will say that Manuel Veth reported that the transfer fee was like around 300,000. So it's again a significant sign. Like I love a good defensive mid. I love a good defensive mid destroyer. I'm super excited, I think, about this move to see how it'll go. He's against South African international. I'm certain that he fits the ethos in terms of pressing and stuff. And you really need a ground covering defensive mid bulldog for that. So we'll see if Blum is that, but I'm super that was their biggest hole and they just filled it.
Big question for him. How good is he with a broadsword? We probably won't find that out, but he does have warrior like qualities.
Is Matias Almeida back?
I'm just messing around. I just love that quote. Warrior qualities. Chris Mavinga to LA Galaxy. That one's done. And then Nick Depew going the other way to, or not going the other way, but going to Nashville. Mavinga to the Galaxy. Quick thought, Doyle.
Good depth. He played his best soccer under Greg Vanney. He was not good the last couple of years, but he's a pro. He's left-footed. If they could get 1,200 good minutes out of him, I think that'll make them very, very happy.
I think you're setting the bar a little low in terms of his playing outlook. I do know that the Greg Vanney piece was what swayed him in the end. He almost went to a different MLS team. There, Toronto did have talks to keep him, but again, Vanney connection, as far as I was told, was a really strong one. So I'm assuming that he's going to have like a regular role.
We'll see. We'll see. Nick Depew, I think 50K in GAM for Nashville.
That's a good deal.
That's really like I think Depew, especially in that Nashville scheme where they don't really move upfield, they don't ask all that much of their center backs in terms of ball carrying. Like I think that he's actually going to end up being very, very good for them. And like they'll need that because Walker Zimmerman's still going to miss time with the national team, and you know who knows if the milkman is going to be ready to play 90 minutes every week.
Oh god!
Seamlessly, seriously picking up on that point while we're all laughing about milkman though. That is a good move. It is worth pointing out that while we were all talking pretty highly about Dave Romney, and Nashville acquired him from the Galaxy for like $250,000 ahead of their expansion season, traded him for what, $525,000 now, and now bringing in Nick DePue as like the depth option. Again, the idea is for Maher to be the partner to Zimmerman, and having DePue for $50,000 as the third option. That's pretty solid.
Yeah, the big question mark for Nashville is, you know, what is Jack Mayer going to be ready? Is he, yeah, you know, is he skim milk? Is he 1%, 2% whole? Are we talking about heavy cream here? Like, what kind of fat content are we getting from Senior Leche? Big question mark.
Are you an oat milk guy, Weeby?
No,
maybe looks like an oat milk guy.
My wife is, though, so I buy it. I just don't consume it.
All right.
Black coffee in the new year, okay? We're going no more milk and sugar for me in the coffee. So Isaiah Foster to FC Cincinnati, a young left back, signed his first professional deal with the Colorado Switchbacks.
Mm-hmm.
And, makes the jump up to Cincinnati. Got brought in on waivers? Or is this official yet?
Right. Yeah, it's official. Okay. This has been in the works for a while, that Cincinnati wanted him as kind of backup left back, rising talent. But he had to go through waivers, I believe, because that's USL to MLS. I don't know the finer point of this very small rule, but yeah, it technically went through waivers. Yeah.
19 years old, 22 games in USL last year. Brendan Burke is the head coach at the Switchbacks. He knows MLS very well. Was in the Philly system for a long time. Said when he got this kid in, he saw immediately, hey, you're a pro. Like, so this is a good signing by Cincinnati. Depth signing. We'll see where he goes from here. They did re-sign Barrial to a 1 year deal with two option years, I think. So Foster maybe he assumes that role if he develops. TBD. Houston Dynamo news: Matias Vera to Argentinos Juniors on loan. You reported that, Tom. And Brad Smith to Houston as a free agent. Also, the Galaxy just signed Memo Rodriguez. So a couple notes there. Kyle Duncan back to the Red Bulls on loan with a purchase option. This is a lot like, it reminds me of RSL drafting a guy they could have had the homegrown rights to. It is quite bizarre and very MLS. The Chicago Fire have signed a right back out of France, Montpellier's Arnaud Soquet. No, nothing of him.
Well done.
Is it?
I think so. You said it with confidence. It's good enough for me.
I petition for all MLS teams to announce signings with a pronunciation guide. Please, please, PR directors, help me out here. Put it in your release. Put it in your write-up. Pedro Gaise got a new contract with Orlando, and Rafael Santos signed as well with Orlando out of Brazil. I think he's a left back, Doyle.
Wouldn't it be Soquet? Because it's French, right? So you probably don't pronounce the T at the end.
I don't know.
S-O-Q-U-E-T. Yes,
sick. Okay.
I wish you would have chimed in the moment, but I appreciate your correction here. I'll do better next time. Domenico Crescito comes out of his brief retirement.
Wait, did you mention the left back?
Yeah, Rafael Santos.
He asked you that, and you replied with, well, actually, correct, this is how you pronounce the name.
Yeah, I was sorry. My head was elsewhere.
Look, I mean, the listeners were like that, too, probably. They were all just pounding their desks and dashboards. And yeah. What I'm not going to say. I'm just going to keep it moving. Domenico Crescito comes out of his brief retirement from Toronto to sign with Genoa for a fifth time. It's almost like maybe he wasn't retiring, but I'll end it there. The Crew signed Jimmy Madronda as a free agent, so you would think he fits pretty well as a left back in a three center back system for their new head coach, Wilfred Nancé. Charlotte signed Ashley Westwood from Burnley. He's 32 years old. He's an English D-mid, coming off that fractured ankle, and Christian Fuchs retired. Harrison Offal also re-signed with Charlotte. Here's a good signing. Matias Laborda, close to signing for Vancouver. Is it done or not done? He's the Nacional out of Uruguay, young center back who was out of contract. So for on a free for Vancouver, that's pretty darn good.
Yeah, it was. Everything was all agreed to and being finalized in these days. There's a medical that it would, barring like something catastrophic happening, he will be signing for the club. And yeah, he was with Nacional. He was a product of their youth academy, and he's made more than 100 appearances in the first team, 23 years old, center back. That's just a really good profile for an MLS team to target and sign.
Absolutely. And Montreal re-signed George Campbell to a new deal, and again, we have reported interest in Alan Sonora and Jackson Mendez for them. Anything we missed, guys? Any milk jokes that you have in the hopper here?
I think you got all of those. I don't think that there's any left on the board.
I bet I could come up with some other ones here. All right, that's it for us. Hit us up. If you have any questions, comments, anything you want us to talk about, we're going to do some fun stuff through this preseason. Starting next show, we will be doing sort of our biggest stories in MLS in the preseason and diving into a couple a day. So hit us up if you have thoughts or questions on those. If you see any transfer rumors or signings you want us to talk about, always happy to dive in. We see most of that, but an extra pair of eyes wouldn't hurt. And remember, MLSsoccer.com is your spot to check out MLS Season Pass that launches on February 1st. Adios. See you on Monday, everybody.
We'll be right back.